Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
go, my fellow Americans,
United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
It's August 9th. It's Thursday night. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, the voice of liberty. I'm Dave, and Lisa's here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave.
How are you today?
I'm just dandy. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm enjoying this little bit cooler weather, huh?
We got an inch of rain last night in my backyard.
Yeah, we got 80 hundredths here, and immediately stuff started turning green again. Is your grass starting to turn green again?
Yeah, the places that aren't completely dead are starting to come back to be green.
Oh, yeah, they'll all come back. The only thing, you're not going to have any places that are completely dead. Unless something has happened where the lab has worn all the grass out and there's just dirt there now.
No, but, you know, I have a relatively newly constructed home,
uh-huh.
And the soil is like concrete. So the conditions weren't good to begin with. Well, we'll see, though. I think I'll be buying a little grass seed this fall.
Well, we spent some time last night talking about the election. Do you feel any better tonight, or are you still feel about the same?
Feel about the same. I'm optimistic that we have a few good candidates in a few good places. I'm a little bit disappointed in the grassroots effort, and we couldn't motivate some people to, walk into some spots. I'm really kind of – in St. Charles County – we had a very unique situation here where we had a great many of our committee man and committee woman seats being challenged. We had a lot of grassroots people trying to take some of those seats, and that was not a very successful venture either.
Here, really?
We got a few, but for the challenge that was being offered in most of the seats, it was not, I think the incumbents did better in that in those races.
Yep.
So, overall for a grassroots effort, I'm a little bit nonplussed.
Yeah, me too. I was more than a little bit disappointed. And again, we've got some things going, but one of those things that we were talking about last night was Ed Martin as Attorney General, and I guess we're going to put him to the test pretty quickly. After we got off the air last night, the news broke that the ACLU has not wasted any time in filing suit against us for Amendment 2.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Right. The specifics of that suit, and there will be more coming, but the specifics of this particular suit filed on behalf of two inmates in the Missouri correctional system had to do with in Amendment 2, it specifically says in the last sentence of the thing that this doesn't extend any extra rights to prisoners, to inmates, and then it goes on to pretty much repeat. In fact, the amendment is just a couple of inserts into what is already Section 5. So it goes on to repeat what is already in Section 5 there, that is basically, you can't be lewd or licentious in your exercise of religion. You can't cause a disturbance of the peace, and you can't overthrow the state through your religion. The ACL, not extend to prisoners was an addition with this amendment, and the ACLU has said that what Missouri's Amendment 2 does is it extends religious freedom beyond the Second Amendment of the United States, and that in doing so, they are certainly welcome to extend religious liberty beyond the Second Amendment, but to do so, they have to do it equally. They can't exempt these prisoners from religious protection. And that's where the ACLU is going with this thing.
Well, you know, I don't think it was a very well thought of, you know, I know, I was not a supporter of this amendment. You know, when you go around tinkering with the constitutions, you just ask for trouble. And, you know, they didn't need it in the first place, and now we're going to be, you know, tied up in court using resources to fight this battle, which seems, you know, ridiculous and redundant.
Listeners, weigh in on this Amendment 2 challenge, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Lisa and Dave, we're here tonight talking at the moment about Amendment 2, which was passed overwhelmingly. We're talking 89-11 or something like that. It was a ridiculously high number of in favors on Tuesday night. And has now been is now officially an amendment to the Missouri State Constitution. I agree with you, Lisa. I was against it from the beginning. I was against it for pretty much all the same reasons you are. It may be even a little bit more adamantly concerned that this is absolutely an establishment of religion, and I voted against it on that principle. However, the people of Missouri wanted it, and now I hope Ed Martin represents the people of Missouri and goes as far as it takes to make sure that we get a shot at keeping this thing in there. I'd hate to see it overturned because it's what the people of Missouri want. I am all about the Constitution, and I am all about the state of Missouri. I hope my hope here is that someone. And that someone, of course, would be Ed Martin, has the kahunas to take this thing on as a state's rights issue. And that is right back to the very basic argument, right back to the first sentence of the ACLU argument, where they say this extends more right than the First Amendment. I think I said Second Amendment earlier, than the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. And I hope somebody just attacks right there and says, that's all right. It doesn't matter. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution doesn't apply to the states, and the states can establish liberty if they so please, or establish religion if they so please, and takes that argument there. I would like to hear what the Supreme Court has to say about that. They have in the past ruled that the Second Amendment applies to other than, or I'm sorry, I keep saying the Second Amendment, the First Amendment applies to other than the federal government, that it does filter down to the states. This court seems to be taking a little dimmer view of those kind of arguments. And in fact, I think if Ed Martin doesn't argue that, maybe Justice Roberts will argue it for him.
Well, okay, so I have mixed emotions on that. And I have to admit, I haven't read the brief, so I don't know for sure. But, you know, what if it is overturned? I wouldn't be so sad if it was overturned. Would they just overturn a portion of it? Would they overturn the whole thing? You know, here's what I would like to see. And we've discussed this, you know, prior to the election. Christians, I think, are making a huge mistake here trying to legislate these social issues. I think they do a much better job, you know, creating the attitude in the culture, creating that strength and foundation in the culture to get what they want, you know, from the support of their Christian religion. If they're being persecuted, they need to fight back at the place they're being persecuted, and I don't think that the Constitution is a place for them to fight back to do that. I also don't think that this is going to be the only lawsuit that we see from this constitutional amendment either. I think we're going to come back to see other things. But you know, if as Christians try to fight for their rights and their freedoms, you know, I think they really have to be careful that they don't try to impose their beliefs and their their standards on others. You know, this is about everybody being able to worship and do as they please, as it fits their own purposes, as long as they don't infringe on others. And I think that with this amendment, I think that they went a little too far trying to protect their Christianity. It may look like it's being imposed on others.
Oh, it absolutely looks like it's being imposed on others. And I said from the beginning, this is an establishment. I mean, you've got an amendment that states in specific words that the president of the city council, the mayor, can open the city council meeting or the town hall meeting with the prayer of his or her choice, and then with the power of the gavel and the podium can shut down any other prayer that is offered. That is absolutely an establishment of whatever religion that mayor or city council president chooses.
Yeah, I understand that. And you know, and the first time that you know you open a city council meeting with a Christian prayer, and then somebody wants to also have a Muslim prayer, you're going to have chaos. And I understand that. However, you know, that's just not how we're built here. You know, and I think I want to make it very clear. I think Christians should fight like hell to maintain the Christian standard in this country. I think the Judeo-Christian foundation that we have, you know, if we lose that, we are sunk. However, you know, when you try to impose it, you just tie yourself up in knots, and I think that's where we're going to get caught up here. And I think Ed Martin will fight this with everything he's got, and I think he'll probably do a very good job. I just think that's where his belief system is, and you know he will defend it rigorously. But I'm just not so sure. I'm not so sure that they should. I think we need to respect the constitutions that. The federal and state constitutions that we had to begin with, and fight this from a different angle.
No, I would agree with you if you want to go so far as to say I'm not sure they should win. I would not agree with you if you want to go so far as to say I'm not sure they should fight this, because now you're putting Ed Martin in the same position that Koster was in when he should have gone to the Supreme Court with our will to overturn Obamacare. And he said, well, that's just not what I believe. And he said, screw you people. You know, I don't think Ed Martin is going to be in a position where he can say, even if his belief system wasn't there, or he should never put himself in a position where he can say, well, I don't believe in this. So screw you 80% of the people. I'm not going to fight this fight for you.
No, I believe Ed will absolutely fight it. I think, you know, not only does he probably believe it's the right thing, but he will not ignore the will of the people.
Right, exactly. And that's good. Where I was going with what I was saying with the fact that this is an establishment is, and listeners, if you've got your red book or whatever color your copy of the Missouri Constitution is in front of you, look up Article 1, Section 7. I do believe at this point in time now, and you're going to have to actually get out a printed copy of the new Section 5. But I believe at this time that Section 5 is in direct conflict with Section 7. So I do not think this even goes to the Supreme Court. I don't think this gets out of the state Supreme Court. I think the state Supreme Court says you've made an amendment that violates another section of your Constitution, and you can't do that.
Okay, I'm looking it up. Religious freedom. August 28th, 2011, so we don't have a new, it's not online. We don't have a new section there.
Now,
but all men have natural and indivisible right to worship.
That's Section 5, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's, we could just, I can read you, I can't read you the new Section 5, so let me go find that if you would. That's going to be that is 2011.
Oh, I've got it here.
Okay.
It here. You ready?
Yep.
That all men have a natural and indefeasible right to worship Almighty God according to the dictates of their own consciences, that no human authority can control or interfere with the rights of conscience, that no person shall, on account of his religion, persuasion, or belief, be rendered ineligible to any public office or trust or profit in the state be disqualified from testing or serving as a juror, or be molested in his person or estate by this section shall not be construed to excuse acts of licentiousness.
Yeah, you can't get naked.
Yeah, nor to justify practices inconsistent with the good order, peace, or safety of the state or with the rights of others. So there
okay.
it is.
But that's the old one now. That is not the new one. That is Article 1, Section 5 in the current Constitution, but not the one that's going to replace that Section 5. There's going to be a new Section 5 now because of what happened night before last. And I can find that easily enough. It's Senate Joint Resolution 2, hence the number Amendment 2.
I can look it up.
Okay, senate.mo.org and SJR2 should House HJR2. While we're going there, I'm going to tell you folks what's coming up. The rest of the night after Lisa and I get done hashing this out and telling you what ought to be. We're going to move on now past this election and into the November election, and we're going to start laying the groundwork for Amendment 3, which is going to be an amendment that's on your November ballot and is going to have to do. There are two important items that are going to appear on your November ballot. One is Amendment 3, and one is Prop E. We're going to talk about Amendment 3 for the rest of the night tonight after we get done with this.
Okay, I'm not finding it. What I'm coming up with is it shows House Concurrent Resolution 53 relating to the summary statement to House Committee Substitute Number 2, House Senate Joint. You know, I don't know why they have to make this so difficult. HJR 2 didn't come up in the search. Are you saying HJR?
Might be HCR 2. No, it's H. It's H. House. I'm sure it's House Joint Resolution 2, HJR 2. But it's the 2011. You may be looking at the 2012 session. It's the 2011 session.
Well, there you go. That's why. Okay. Got it.
So and then tomorrow night on the roundtable, Lisa and I will be back, and we're going to have a guest who will join us, and we're going to go ahead and finish talking about Amendment 3 in November, and we're going to begin talking about Prop E, which is quite the barrel of gunpowder. Okay, go ahead, Lisa. Tell us after you read us how Section 5 used to say. Now read us how Section 5 reads now.
Okay, let's see. Almighty God, according to the dictates of their own consciences, that no human authority can control or interfere with the rights of conscience, that no person shall on account of his, her, or her religious persuasion or belief be rendered ineligible to any public office or trust or profit in this state, be disqualified from testifying or serving as a juror, or be molested by his or her person or estate. Okay, here's the change. That to secure a citizen's right to acknowledge Almighty God according to the dictates of his or her own conscience, neither the state nor any of its political subdivisions shall establish any official religion, nor shall a citizen's right to pray or express his or her religious beliefs be infringed, that the state shall not coerce any person to participate in any prayer or any other religious activity, but shall ensure that any person shall have the right to pray individually or corporately in a private or public setting so long as such prayer does not result in disturbance of the peace or disruption of a public meeting or assembly, that the citizen, as well as elected officials and employees of the state of Missouri and its political subdivisions, shall have the right to pray on a government premises and public property, this is very long, so long as such prayer abide within the same parameters placed upon any other free speech under similar circumstances, that the General Assembly and the governing bodies of the political subdivisions may extend to ministries, clergy persons, and any other individuals the privilege to offer invocations or other prayers at meetings or sessions of the General Assembly or governing bodies, that students may express their beliefs about religion in written and oral assignments free from the discrimination based on religious content of their work, that no student shall be compelled to perform or participate in academic assignments or educational presentations that violate his or her religious beliefs, that the state shall ensure public school students their right to free exercise of religious expression without interference as long as such prayer or other expression is private and voluntary, whether individually or corporately, and in a manner that is not disruptive, and as long as such prayer or expressions abide within the same parameters placed upon any other free speech under similar circumstances, and to emphasize the right to free exercise of religious expression, that all free public schools receiving state appropriations shall display in conspicuous a legible manner the text of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution of the United States, but this section shall not be construed to expand the rights of prisoners in state or local custody beyond those afforded by the laws of the United States. Excuse acts of litigious nor justify practices inconsistent with court order, yada yada yada.
Right. Okay, so what they've added is, and they did add a section.
They're inviting public riots.
Yeah. They added a section that says that this section doesn't establish a religion, but then they go on to suggest that the mayor, who has the power to shut down any other speech in the place, can open the session with a prayer, let's say a Christian prayer, let's say a Wiccan prayer, and then he can shut down the Muslim prayer when the person tries to offer it, thereby establishing for that city even a religion of Wicca. You can argue that that is or isn't establishment, because you can say that the new Constitution says we can't establish, but the very act of having done that is an establishment. Further, it says that a student can refuse to participate in a particular and specific school activity or academic subject or portion of an academic subject, because that portion of subject or that activity is in violation of his or her religion. So you let the Christian student opt out of the chapter of physics about the Big Bang because that's a violation of the Christian's religion. And now you have opened yourself up to any student who comes in and says, yes, but my church is the Church of the Flying Spaghetti, and we don't believe in photosynthesis. So we're not going to study that. And you cannot say no now, because you've said yes to the Christian. And if you do say no, you are establishing a preference for the Christian religion over the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Brothers, or whatever it is.
Really interesting, because we have Common Core standards in Missouri, which means that we have federally mandated curriculum.
Right.
So, you know, and I mean, that's going to go all across the state. It goes all across the country. So I wonder how that's going to tie into the Common Core problem that we've got.
Well, I'll tell you where it's going to tie in may not even be in the instruction, because the Common Core only cares that the teacher teaches the Big Bang. They don't care that the student learns the Big Bang. However, when that same student, when that same student goes to take his SAT or his ACT or to take his MAP test or whatever the test is going to be at the end of the session that tests the Common Core and the teaching of the Common Core, and that student refuses to answer a question about the Big Bang because he says, I refuse to study that because it was my religion, then there's going to be a conflict between what the state of Missouri said and what the Federal Department of Education is saying.
Right. Big can of worms. Okay. Yep. Also, this is inviting riots. Okay. Because it said, and let me see if I can find the place. Let's see. But shall ensure that any person shall have the right to pray individually or corporately in a private or public setting so long as the prayer does not result in a disturbance of the peace or disruption of the public meeting or assembly, that the citizen as well as the elected officials and employees of the state of Missouri and its political subdivisions shall have the right to pray on government premises so long as the prayers abide with the same parameters placed on the other free speech under similar circumstances. Okay, so again, you open with a Christian prayer and you have somebody, you know, you have a Buddhist or a Muslim or somebody, and you get some hot-headed Christians, or you get some hot-headed Buddhists and Muslims, you know, who say that it's disturbing their peace, you know, and then you've got riots, and you've got a mess. I think it's just bad all the way around.
It is. Uh-huh. It is. Now,
when they wrote this.
Now, I want to read Section 7. Section 7 of the same article says, no money shall ever be taken from the public treasury, directly or indirectly, in aid of any church, sector, denomination, or religion, or in aid of any priest, preacher, minister, or teacher thereof, as such, and that no preference shall be given to, nor any discrimination made against any church, sector, creed of religion, or any form of religious faith or worship. I see a direct conflict between that and the new Section 5. Do you?
Yeah. It's about the funding, so I don't know. Explain it.
Well, it's not only about funding, but it's that last, that no preference shall be given to, nor any discrimination made against any church, sect, or creed of religion. So if you have the chaplain, first of all, the chaplain, I don't know whether the chaplain of the General Assembly is paid or not paid. I doubt that's a paid position. It may be a different pastor they invite in every day to say a prayer, but it's always a Christian prayer. And so right there, you've got a real conflict between no preference shall be given to, nor any discrimination made, in my book.
Well, and it, I think it does say that too in Section 5. You know, as long as, you know, everything, prayer is okay as long as you're not disturbing the peace, pretty much.
Right.
So, you know, you're free to do that silently and privately, you know, as long as you're not bothering anybody.
Right.
So I think they're kind of covered there.
I don't know. What happens when the principal offers a prayer? Are they not violating when the principal offers a prayer to start the school day? No preference shall be given to any church, sect, or creed?
Hmm. Yeah, it's a little sticky.
So anyway, that's it. That's the lawsuit. The ACLU has not wasted any time. We're going to be following that for you and with you. We'll be following it here, at least on the Hour of Truth. I can't imagine that Lisa will fail to mention any new happenings on the Culture Vigilante Hour on Wednesday nights. We will certainly keep up with that on the Friday night roundtables, and you can always keep up with what's happening there at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org or at our Facebook page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We will keep the news updated. We'll keep the breaking news coming on that. I believe that Facebook-wise and probably maybe even web-wise, we were the first here. I'm not. Yes, I am too, bragging about us. We were the first to actually get this item out, this item of breaking news out to the grassroots world in Missouri today. So, Lisa, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and you and I are going to dispense some knowledge and wisdom about what's coming up in November with another constitutional amendment, Amendment 3, and it is not about religion in any way, shape, or form. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with that Amendment 3, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Get in here and be heard. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. You can be on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Dave and Lisa here tonight. We've just wrapped up talking about the lawsuit that's already been filed on Amendment 2, an amendment to Section 5 of the Missouri Constitution. We're going to talk here in just 1 minute about November's ballot and Amendment 3. But first, I want to flash back to that commercial break we just took, Lisa. Secret Santa has $65 in it now.
Oh, very good. Okay, we need more, though.
We do. We need more. We're looking to. We did $250 last year, folks, and we're here begging for money in August because we know that December, when we're coming down to the wire on this thing, is going to be the hardest time for us to ask or for you to donate. And we know you're tapped out. We know that every one of you has sent all of your pennies, nickels, and dimes to your favorite grassroots candidate to try to get them elected. That's over. Your candidate either is not elected. I'm sorry. Like mine is. I'm sorry for my favorites. Or is elected and now has all the wealth of the Missouri State Republican Party behind them. So come on, turn around now and send us some of those nickels and dimes, please. We're not asking for $100,000 here. We're not asking for $1,000 here. We would like to double last year's Secret Santa and get $500 by the 24th of December. Now, there's no overhead here. This is a worthwhile charity. There is zero overhead. We're going to get in our car or cars, and we're going to drive with our own gas and on our own time to a Kmart and a Walmart and a Target, and we're going to pick out some layaways that on the 24th of December that are not going to be paid off in time. And we are going to spend every dime you send. I will even chip in $2 or $3 or $5 or $10, and if it's 15, then Lisa and Terry and I'll split it or something. But to make sure that we go over whatever it is you folks donate, so that there is not a penny left. We're not charging for gas. There are no salaries involved here. There's no advertising involved here. We're pushing it on this show, and that's it. So every dime that's sent in is going to this charity, to this worthwhile cause. And the reason we thought about doing this last year is because we were just now getting into, you know, people were starting to drop out. The Republican primary was starting to narrow down, and we were already starting to hear the rhetoric from the left about how stingy conservatives are, how we want to throw grandma off the cliff, how greedy we are, how greedy capitalism is in general. And we know that's not true. We know that conservative people are the most generous people in the world. If the United States was conservative, we wouldn't need food stamps because the people would take care of themselves. We didn't need food stamps during the Great Depression. We didn't need them. Now, people didn't eat sirloin steak every night. And they went a lot of nights in a row on pinto beans and cornbread. But
Dave,
people,
I think you did a fabulous job last night talking about how the culture has changed and how people used to take care of each other and, you know, not rely on government. And I think this is the perfect example of that, how we can start to change the culture just a little bit and send some money so that we can go out into the communities and help some families in need to where we're not relying on the government to do it. You know, well, you know, this is not a welfare thing. This is just an out-and-out charity from the kindness of our heart. We're not getting anything out of this other than being able to just help some families at Christmas and make some kids happy and not ask anybody for anything except, you know, just do it, you know, just support your communities a little bit.
That's right. And we don't even tell the manager at Walmart or Kmart, hey, you tell these people that Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a bunch of conservatives, did this. We just say, that's it. You know, we pay the layaway. We make sure that the managers call the people so that they come and get their stuff and that they know that it's paid for. And then we just disappear into the night. And,
right.
And I think it's great. I think it's great. And we're begging you people to help us out with this. We're not looking for a ton of money. So I'm done harping about that for tonight. I've got 120 days more between now and December 24th. Don't anybody call and tell me that I can't count because I just made that number up. I don't know how many days it is. Okay, Lisa. Amendment 3 is coming up in November, and that has to do with how we pick judges to fill the Supreme Court, the State Appellate Court, and some of the circuit courts in the state of Missouri. Are we ready for this, do you think?
Well, Dave, let's talk about the courts. What a mess. And
it
yes,
is a mess.
I think we are ready. We absolutely need to do something about you know, cleaning up the judiciary. In my opinion, you know, while we've been engaged and activated into starting to really pay attention to our executive and our legislative branches, our judiciary has been, for a lot longer than that, flying under the radar, operating in the cover of darkness on so many levels, and totally, I think, probably doing more damage to change the culture of America than maybe the other two branches of government. Very corrupt, and it's very unsupervised and unregulated and we have lost control, and it's a mess. So any step we can take in that direction to start cleaning that mess up is a good move in the right direction.
Now, we'll start tonight by laying some groundwork for the listeners. I know that a lot of people, I in fact know that a lot of people, because I know a lot of people personally, who are confused by what the amendment is and in fact are confused by how we do it now and what it is that we're wanting to change. And the answer to this question is going to go right back to what you were talking about, Lisa, and that is how in the hell did the judiciary become so mamby-pamby and even progressive? Back at the turn of the last century, the late 18s and the early 19s, we used to vote for judges. I mean, we used to vote for judges just like we vote for mayors and senators. A Democrat and a Republican would raise their hands and say, hey, I want to be judge, and their name would go on a ballot, and the people would go out when they had their election, and they would vote for John Democrat or Frank Republican, and that person would be the judge. It was just that simple. They served a four-year term, and at the end of the 4 years, they either tried to be the judge again, or two other people raised their hand, and they went through that whole thing again. And that worked out fairly well. It really did. All through the Wild West and all through the, you know, you had hardcore law and order judges from people who wanted hardcore law and order society. And then along comes you've heard about political machines, right, Lisa?
Yes.
Yeah. So what the political machines were, and I don't know if you watched The Gangs of New York, but Tammany Hall in New York was a huge political machine. And Pendergast in Kansas City was another one, and one of the huge ones in the country. The Daley machine, which actually originated from the Cook County Democratic machine, was a huge one in Illinois. And for that matter, that machine still runs a very corrupt city and state in Illinois, one of the most corrupt in the nation, and as we saw with the recent Rob Blagojevich trial. But out of these machines now, when they first became popular, they were organized. They weren't, when they first started around, they weren't any different than what we're trying to do, an organization of people who cared, who had a common ideal. And out of these machines rose such names as Harry Truman and John F. Kennedy, Stuart Symington in Missouri, and so some good things happened when people got together. But eventually, as tends to happen, even in groups like the St. Louis Tea Party, one person rises to dominance, and at that point, things become problematic. Daley in Chicago, for example, in the Cook County Democratic Society, and Pendergast in Kansas City. And what happens at that point is these people start putting their favorite, I mean, the primaries then become useless. People start putting their person in these slots, and by getting them elected, by buying votes, by you know, it goes back to the early 1900s when you hear the things like vote early and vote often, when you hear about, you know, people going in, going outside, changing hats and running in to vote again. And those things really happened, and elections were swung, and pretty soon Pendergast owned Jackson County and the city of Kansas City, Missouri. When that happened, he was able to pick his judges, and when he could pick the judges, then he owned law and order in the city. And when he owned law and order in the city, then, of course, he got in bed with the mob, and not only then did corruption foment itself in the political structure, but Pendergast got richer and richer and richer as time went by. So go ahead, Lisa.
No, I mean, so there you have it. Okay, so you've got that issue. Oh, I'm just going to let you finish. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dave.
So long about 1940, the people of Missouri got pretty tired of this, and they passed an amendment to their constitution called the Missouri Plan, and no longer, and so they specifically targeted Jackson and St. Louis. And there was a small machine working in St. Louis. I don't recall the name of it. Dickman Hannigan. Hannigan or Hannigan machine in St. Louis. And so they targeted specifically Jackson County and St. Louis. This was about beating the machine. And then they opened that up to any circuit that wanted to. And basically what was going to happen from that point forward is that a nonpartisan, quote-unquote, panel would appoint judges, would appoint candidates, would choose candidates for any opening in the Supreme Court, in the Missouri State Court of Appeals. There's three districts in the Court of Appeals, and in these two circuits, and in any circuits that wanted to play this game by a vote of the people, any other circuits besides these two that were mandated. And for the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, four names would be put forward to the governor, and the governor would choose one of those four names. If the governor didn't choose a name within 60 days, then the panel would choose from those four names. The panel would consist of three attorneys appointed by the Missouri Bar Association, three non-attorney citizens appointed by the governor and the Chief Justice of the Missouri State Supreme Court, and there was a like panel for each circuit, only two attorneys, two non-attorneys, and the chief judge of that circuit. And they would, the circuits only sent three names up to the governor, and the governor picked from those three names. But other than that, it was identical. So that became known as the Missouri Plan, and was so popular and so effective, really, at that time, in breaking these machines and their power over the judiciary up, that it has since been adopted as the Missouri Plan. I mean, it's known all over the country now as the Missouri Plan, Missouri the bellwether state, and has been adopted by 34 other states. So that's how we got where we are today.
And on the surface, it sounds good.
It does. And like unions, it had its time. It did what it was supposed to do. It did what it was designed to do. And like unions, it became in itself corrupt over time.
Right. So is the plan just to shake it up every so often, every few decades, and, you know, adopt a new plan to break up the corruption? Or do you think we can ever engage the people enough to pay attention to their judiciary?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. What has happened, though, that's caused us, as you have noted quite wisely before we started this and ad nauseum in weeks before this, the judiciary has drifted and drifted and drifted to the left, to the left, to the point of obscenity, really. And how that happens is this. Now let's go back to the because the makeup is identical, just one less judge and one less citizen. So let's just talk about the state panel, the 3-3-1. What you have is you have three lawyers appointed by the Missouri Bar Association. Now, nod your head if you think that's not three liberals right there.
Well, and not only, regardless of if, whether or not they're liberal or conservative, it's the fox guarding the hen house.
Well, yeah,
they're pointing their own bosses. That's never, you know, when is that ever a good idea?
But that's not the majority now, because the governor appoints three non-attorney citizens to counter those three votes.
Okay, so and as long as they're not in cahoots, that's, you know, probably fine. But seriously?
Well, I mean, let's just pretend that none of these six people know each other. When you have three attorneys appointed by the Bar Association, and at least 50% of the time, you have three citizens appointed by a Democrat or liberal governor, then what have you got in a six-member panel?
Right.
You've got a bunch of people that are liberal with an agenda that is liberal, who are looking for four candidates to send to the governor who are liberal, who the governor is going to accept one of because he's a liberal.
Yeah. And the people appointing are not elected officials, to where there's no accountability to the people for their choices.
That's right. And in the best of times, you have a conservative governor. You have a panel that is made up of three liberal lawyers, any number of depending on how many people this governor got to appoint to that particular panel, any number of liberal and or conservative citizens. Let's say there's three conservative citizens.
Well, the governor's going to appoint anybody who's going to advance his own agenda.
He is.
So he's not appointing,
But the thing is that when Dave Spence moves into the governor's mansion, he is already stuck till the end of their term with the citizens that Jay Nixon appointed.
Right.
So,
you know, and that blade cuts both ways. I mean, you know,
does.
You have conservative, and, you know, it's just like the president appointing, you know, Supreme Court justices. Sure. You know, that's how that works. The problem here is that there's no citizen accountability measures there.
That's right.
You know, you've got a situation here where, you know, the governor's appointing people to appoint, and they're not accountable to anybody except the governor. So that's not
going to work. That's right. And these lawyers are accountable to nobody but, as you say, the chickens who are guarding the hen house.
And that's never a good – I mean, that entire situation has to change, actually, not only from appointing judges but from disciplinary action. You know, you've got the Bar Association who disciplines the legal system. You know, again, that's another situation where, you've got the fox guarding the hen house. So in any situation where you have the fox guarding the hen house, that should not be taking place at all. I see no good where lawyers are appointing their own judges. I don't see how that can be good at all.
Okay. And then the deciding vote, you've now got six people on this panel. Then the deciding vote is the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court, who is
the fox guarding the hen house.
Someone who rose through this very liberal system.
Right.
And so people are looking at that and saying, as you did, first of all, there is a cry of fox guarding the hen house running on this thing. There is a cry of the fact that this is not exactly nonpartisan, if you want to look at partisanship rather than Democrat, Republican in a liberal conservative sense. And there is a cry of no accountability, especially with these three lawyers. Now, you could argue that at least the three citizens, and it is being argued, in fact, in Amendment 3, that the three citizens who are appointed by the governor do have the level of accountability in that the governor who appointed them is answerable to the people. But honest to God, Lisa, can you tell me who the three people are on this panel right now? And you're pretty into politics.
I don't have a clue.
Right. So there you go. And there, you know, there's all kinds of stipulations there. The three people have to come, one person and one of the attorneys from each of the three districts of the appellate, from each of the appellate districts, and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, the change that someone thinks is going to make this better is simply this, and this is Amendment 3 and what you'll be voting on in November. I don't know what the ballot language is going to be on this. We may wage another war on that when the time comes. But basically, they want to do away with the voting judge in the panel. There would be a judge who would be on the panel, but as a non-voting member, he would kind of be there in an advisory role. And you know, like the lieutenant governor in the state house, banging the gavel once in a while and making a guest appearance, but he/she would be a non-voting member, and then that position would revert to a citizen position appointed by the governor, giving the non-bar association appointees a majority, a clear majority. So now you've got 4-3 on this panel, people who are four people who are not appointed by the Missouri State Bar, and three people who are appointed by the Missouri State Bar. And the feeling is that this will be sufficient to swing the panel away from the non-accountability issue of people who are selected by the bar.
So the tiebreaker is the governor.
No, the tiebreaker is this where this judge used to sit. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, in the case we're just talking about the state panel now, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court was the seventh member. He was a voting member. He came up through the system, through the Bar Association.
And the court judge.
But now they are taking that judge away and replacing him with a fourth citizen appointed by the governor. So now there are four citizens appointed by the governor and three attorneys appointed by the bar.
Okay, so I have the official ballot language.
Okay.
And it's almost as egregious as the constitutional amendment ballot language, or I'm sorry, the
amendment to. Oh, okay, go ahead. Let's hear it.
So, shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to change the current nonpartisan selection of Supreme Court and Court of Appeals judges to a process that gives the governor increased authority to appoint a majority of commission that selects these court nominees and appoint all lawyers to the commission by removing the requirement that the governor's appointees be non-lawyers?
Exactly. Exactly. So.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that – what do you find egregious about that, Lisa? I think that's pretty much what we just said.
Well, you know, it's not nonpartisan. So they're trying to defend the Missouri plan and keep the Missouri plan in place because it's not nonpartisan. But I agree with you, Dave. I don't think that the alternative that they're offering is any better.
I'm not sure it's any better either. I believe that it's more partisan than the current Missouri plan, because now you have four members appointed by a Democrat or a Republican. So whether the governor is Jay Nixon or the governor is Dave Spence, you're going to have four members of a seven-member panel appointed by the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have four Republican members of the panel or four Democratic members of the panel. And being Democrat or Republican isn't exactly nonpartisan. And those Democrats or Republicans are going to be the majority of the panel. Now, here's what is in the ballot language. And it surprised me when you read that, because I thought this was the part they would try to hide from you. No longer do the governor's choices have to be non-attorneys. So now all seven members of the panel are going to be lawyers.
Appoint a majority of the commission that selects these court nominees and appoint all lawyers to the commission by removing the requirement that the governor's appointees be non-lawyers.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, I thought they'd try to hide that from us. I really did. I think that is a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, it's more foxes guarding the hen house.
Exactly. Even though the four lawyers now appointed by the governor aren't appointed by the Bar Association, so we're maintaining accountability, or at least an illusion of accountability.
I don't see any accountability in this at all.
Oh, no, I don't either. But they're going to give you an illusion of accountability by telling you that four out of seven of the members are appointed by a person you elected.
And they're lawyers. So you've got.
And I know some good lawyers, Lisa. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but good or bad, lawyers should never be choosing their bosses.
Exactly. The judge isn't really the lawyer's boss, but yeah, I mean, they should never be choosing the people who are going to adjudicate their cases.
Well, exactly. I mean, they are accountable to the judge sitting on the bench.
That's
you
right.
You do not choose your own boss.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I believe that this is no better. And you know, this is... I've spent about 2 days studying this thing, I'm not even well enough into it yet that I realized the ballot language had been written. So that's how I'm going to say my initial reaction is this is no better and maybe a little worse than what we have. We're going to kind of expand on that and refine that a bit as we go along. This is your Amendment 3 101, listeners. This is your survey course on Amendment 3. So we're not here tonight yet saying this is bad or this is good. But my initial impression is that this is no better than what we had before.
Right. It's not a solution to the problem.
And maybe it's worse. I mean, I would almost rather see us go back to the people voting for judgeship between a Democrat and a Republican. Now let's do introduce a little bit of accountability here. 1 year after the judge is appointed, he goes on, you know, when you go in, you've seen him on the ballot. Should Judge Frank Smith be retained in the 42nd Circuit? Should Judge Anthony Weiner be maintained in the Missouri Court of Appeals? So 1 year after the judge is appointed, he goes on the ballot for what's called a retention vote. And then after that, it's 4-year terms. So I think it may be 6-year terms. Go ahead.
With that, there is no system set in place. And this is yet another problem with the entire judicial system. There's no system set in place for people to be able to monitor the actions of judges. So nobody is seriously trying to solve this problem. I mean, this is the foxes, you know, this is a system of the lawyers, run by lawyers, set up by lawyers, played in their lawyer's field. Nobody's really trying to solve this problem.
No, and maybe that's one direction we could go, with or without a vote of the people, with or without the Missouri plan, or with or without the Missouri plan as amended, Lisa. You may have hit on something there, because, you know, you and I and Tom Martz and Carl Bearden and Ron and Gretchen, I mean, we have organizations that are monitoring what's happening in education. We have people monitoring what's happening in the legislature. We have people, I mean, maybe it's up to us to watchdog these judges and get it out there every election. You know, this guy's bad and he needs to go. This guy's good and he needs to stay.
Yeah, but there's no system set in place where you can actually monitor their rulings.
Oh, there is. I mean, there is a system. It's just a matter of finding it, just like you do a piece of legislation and who voted yes and who voted no. I mean, all of the cases of the appeals court and the Missouri Supreme Court are public record.
Well, yeah, all of them. You know, some of that information is not public record.
Well, I mean, you know, you'll get things that get sealed, but those are generally, you know, few and far between items that get sealed. In one of your areas of concern, I'm sure that a lot of stuff gets sealed, the guardian ad litem issues and where a judge might go. But those aren't usually the kinds of judges that get appointed like this, are they? Those aren't circuit judges. And
but they work way up through the system as well. You know, you don't start out as a Supreme Court judge. You know, you start out, you know, on the circuit level,
yeah.
You work your way up. So you have no way of following somebody's career.
Oh, no, that's true. That's true. No, and really, all you can do in a system like this is start following them from the day they get appointed and be ready at that one-year point when they come up for their first retention, because you're not going to stop an appointment anyway. You could be waving a checkered flag and saying, this is the worst judge in the world, and this is what he did. And this is how she ruled on, you know, State versus Mass Murderer 3 that walked out the door. And it's not going to do any good to this appointment committee. They're going to do what the hell they please. But from the day they get appointed until the day of that first retention hearing, then you could track them. And then from that point forward, I mean, through their next term, and at least there would be someone there at retention time to say, here's the record of this judge.
Well, I mean, not easy, but, you know, I think there needs to be an easier way to follow the careers of these judges so that the people can make decisions. And obviously we're not seeing any of this in Constitutional Amendment 3, so.
Right.
And not likely to anytime soon.
Okay. I'm going to write that down. Maybe we need a branch of one of our organizations here that could take on judicial watch and specifically justices that are coming up for retention hearings. I don't know that that's feasible. I don't know that that's doable. I don't know that there's anybody out there who has the time or the inclination to do that, but we'll look into that. The kernel of an idea planted by Lisa Payne Nager. Lisa, what you got coming up next week?
I don't know yet. I haven't planned my show, but I would imagine too. We do Missouri Grassroots Coalition wide. We want to hit Prop E and start educating the folks on how we can start fighting back against this ridiculous ballot language and start getting some information out there. So when we go to the polls in November, that we are armed with information in order to make a good decision on how to vote for that ballot language. So we'll start there on Wednesday.
I think actually maybe you and I start in on that tomorrow night, you and I and whoever comes along.
That's fine.
Yeah.
We're going to hit that from now until November.
We are. We're going to hit it hard. We'll introduce to you folks tomorrow night a pamphlet. We have a one-page pamphlet that's going to show up on Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org Monday morning. It'll be there waiting for you. It's a two-color pamphlet, which will print nicely in black and white if that's the way you want to do it. We're a broke organization, folks. We cannot afford to send you 100 copies or 200 copies or 500 copies of this or whatever you need. The pamphlet will be there, though. It's a crisp, clear, clean pamphlet that you can print either in two colors or in black and white, your choice, and it will explain what you're voting for if you say yes, and what you're voting for if you say no in clear terms. You can run off one, you can run off 10, you can, it's not any way copyrighted. We want it out there. Run off 100, 500, 1,000, take them door to door, take them to your meetings, leave a stack of them at the convenience store, whatever you need to do to help us get the word out, because this ballot language is designed to trick you into voting the wrong way.
Absolutely.
And we'll be talking about that tomorrow. If you want to do your homework or your required reading before you listen in tomorrow night, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the forum, and just start from the top there. We explain what the ballot language is, what the underlying proposition is that that ballot language supposedly represents, and what the difference is between the two and why this is so egregious and how it can be very, very tricky if you don't know what you're doing. And not only is it egregious in that sense, but it is egregious in the inflammatory wording.
Right.
So we're going to deal with that tomorrow night. Be sure and tune in tomorrow night. It's always fun to tune in to the Missouri Grassroots Roundtable, where Lisa and I bump heads once in a while over things like constitutional conventions and the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution. We probably won't get into any of that tomorrow night, but I'm sure I'll say the words at least once or twice so that Lisa's nostrils flare and you guys can get a kick out of it, because you might be bored otherwise. So that's going to be it tonight. Next week is going to be a little bit more laid back. That's why Lisa was kind of, you know, because we've been working our butts off. We've had our schedules written out 2, 3, 4 weeks in advance here as we geared up for this primary. We're in kind of a, like the candidates who won or lost, we're kind of taking 3 or 4 days off to rest and just recap and look ahead and see what needs to be done between now and November. I'll tell you, though, I'll give you a little hint. Between now and November, we are going to deal with the issues on the ballot. We're going to deal a lot less with the candidates and a lot more with the issues that are going to be on your ballot. If you have an issue in your local area that you need us to highlight for you, call it in. Write it into info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And we'll deal with that as well. And then as soon as that's over, we're going to start dealing with the soon to come up new legislative session. Lisa, thanks. I've had fun. I always enjoy spending time with you on the radio.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here. We'll see you tomorrow night on the radio.
Tomorrow night we'll be here. Thanks, folks, and good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Mom!